Hey guys, welcome to our campfire conversation tonight, and I've really been looking forward to this one. We're going to take some time to talk with Gary Barkalow about a journey that he's been on and what God has been teaching him, speaking to him about, and he's right in the middle of this journey. And so, Gary, we're really glad to have you here, and we're glad to be able to interview you instead of you interviewing us. And I'd like to start by saying, so I think you were saying some stuff surfaced, some things came up just last summer. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, as we go through this, and you've all seen, you know, the introduction to this call, the promo of the call, talking through this this pattern that God seems to use in our life of disrupting our life, you know, then coming and then dismantling the things that we have in our life that are in the way, and then rebuilding and releasing us. And as you said, Sam, I'm in the very much in the middle of this. I just kind of wanted to share this. And so as I get into this, yeah, let me start with what happened last July. But let me start with maybe more of a metaphor, a story. You know, here in Colorado, they have, you know, put up these digital signs on all the highways. You know, so it's I-25, which runs north and south along the Front Range, and then 70, which runs east and west across the mountains. And so you see these signs, and they'll warn you of a traffic accident or icy roads or some kind of hazardous conditions. And they really are amazing in the winter when it just says, you know, icy roads ahead or snow-packed or slippery or something. You know, if you're smart, you really pay attention to the sign. You don't wait till you hit the ice and decide, I better slow down, because then it's too late. So the signs really are a great courtesy.
So you're basically saying I'm not smart.
But for our journey, well, yeah, you don't slow down for much. I do know that. But God kind of put up this sign in front of me on this recent part of my journey. And it came through a prayer time that I went into. I was doing a conference up in Woodland Park, only about 40 minutes from here, with a friend of mine. And during part of the time off in this conference, they had ministry time where you could go in and sign up for this. And it was really prophetic ministry time where they would pray while you were sitting there. They really weren't asking you your story or any questions. You would sit down and they would just start to pray. And then they would let you know what they were hearing or sensing or seeing. And so I went in, and it didn't take long before one of these signs lit up. And basically, out of the three people, this one woman who spoke up, she said, Gary, she said, I see you walking into a boulder field. And in this field, there are rocks. There are boulders, some you can jump over, some you can climb over, and some, they are too big and too smooth. There are no handholds for you to climb these boulders. No matter how much skill and experience that you have, you can't climb these. These are rocks, these are boulders that God is going to have to lift you over. And she said, and I see a boulder field of these. And just to be honest with you guys, I mean, my reaction was, you know, I thought you said that, you know, prophetic words are to encourage, and, you know, and give strength. And I just
get me a new prophet.
Yeah, give me somebody who really hears from God. And so, you know, and all the words weren't like that, but this one stood out. And she came back to it later and said, I still see this. And, you know, and I thought, well, you know, you're always taught when someone brings a word to you, whether they're calling it a prophetic word or they're calling it an impression or counsel or advice or whatever, you know, you pray about that. You ask God to confirm it. And the sad truth was I didn't do any of that. I just dismissed it. I mean, I held on to the other things said to me, but not this.
Now, did you know this woman at all?
You know, she had been to our house once, she and her husband, for someone else's teaching over there. And I had met her, but I didn't really know her. She didn't know me, really. So she didn't have any kind of inside intel on me to speak from. But I can tell you now that word, that was one of those, you know, highway digital signs saying, hey, you've got certain road conditions up here that you need to be prepared for. And I kind of ignored it at first, And the good thing is, you know, you travel on any of the highways when they have the system of these signs. You know, you travel, I don't know, 10 more miles or 20 more miles, and you're going to see another sign. It's going to warn you again. And
you can't.
God was pretty good in warning me a second time. And I don't even want to call it a warning. It just felt more like a, let me just tell you what's coming. Let me prepare your heart for what's about to come. I'd rather use that than a warning, because warning so many times carries the idea of punishment coming, and it really wasn't and isn't that.
Yeah.
Now let me go back to the second sign.
Right.
So like I said, in July I hear this, and I think, well, you know, of course God needs to be involved in our life, and, you know, there has to be steps of faith, and honestly, I didn't pay it much mind. And then in August, so that was July, and then in August, I was in Mississippi doing a calling retreat. In fact, Jeff, you were with me on that one, and it was just a great time. I mean, just great guys to be with, just fun things were happening. So flying back, I'm sitting on the airplane. I've got my iPad out in front of me, and I'm just typing some notes of things I want to change or add, or ideas or things that I heard. And as I'm doing that, I'm playing music through my iTunes on my iPad, and I just put it on shuffle play. And so I heard a couple songs, probably, that, you know, like an Eagle song, and then James Taylor, and, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in shuffle play, comes this prophetic word, because they had recorded it, and I put it in my iTunes so I could access it. And so right away, she comes on, and I'm listening to it. I mean, I'm thinking, well, okay, yeah, I'll listen to this. And I'd kind of forgotten about it. So I'm listening to this, and I mean, two-thirds through her word, I just hit next and went on back to James Taylor or somebody, you know, because I thought, I don't need to hear this now. And I'm still kind of discounting this thing, not taking it seriously, thinking, you know what, we all have hits and misses when we try to speak into someone's life. Well, the amazing thing was, so I get home Sunday evening. Let's say Monday, you know, I'm just kind of wandering around the house, trying to relax. And so Tuesday, I start having to look at a few things.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the, all of a sudden I decide to look at the calendar and past the fall, because I knew it was coming up in September,
yeah,
October, November, December. I start looking at the calendar, and I'm realizing there are no calling events whatsoever on the calendar after December. And then I start looking at the numbers for December, the exploration retreat, and I'm seeing how low they are. And then I'm looking at finances, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, here's the boulder. I mean, there is no doubt I am looking at something that I don't know how to climb over. This is out of my control. And I think that's the first time that I thought, God, you really did speak to this lady. You know, you spoke to her. Now what do I do with this?
So you're beginning to look at some things, and the future isn't looking very good. And
right.
So then you sort of think back to the message you had just heard again, and what are you thinking about God in all this? Well, I mean, what do you think of God? You know, what's your experience of him in this? Is he a harsh taskmaster? I don't know. I mean, what are you thinking about God when you start looking at finances going down, retreats going down, and the December retreat losing money?
Well, you know what? To be really candid here, I was a little worried, but not much, because things were immediately okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I did, Sam, to be honest, is I just kind of didn't look at the future, and I looked at the present and said, it's okay. We're okay right now, you know? And it's just so funny, because, again, it was like you see those road signs, and it was saying, you know, icy roads ahead, and I'm thinking, the roads look dry here. What's mm-hmm. the big deal? And so at that point, honestly, I wasn't wrestling with God yet.
Okay.
Now, it did come, but not at that moment, because I was living kind of more in the future. And, hey, look, everything looks fine right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're predicting a storm, but look at the sky. It looks pretty clear.
The immediate future looks good.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Okay, so let me jump in. So that was August, right?
Yep.
September. Now, and a lot of you guys were at this thing. September, we had, at the end of September, we had the base camp gathering out here in Colorado. And so for you guys who have been to this before, you kind of know how we do this. We and it was a little different the last time in September than it was this one we did in February because we were trying something and experimenting. But what we did was we had all these sessions, kind of formal sessions upstairs, formally gathering, and then we'd have a lot of times informally gathered downstairs, talking, taking walks, having a cigar, whatever we wanted to do. And so, but there was a session, I think I actually began it, and it was talking really about the idea of what are the motives in our heart, and the fact that those are really hard to read. We're often not aware of them. And so I showed some film clips and put out a couple questions, and I remember it was a scripture. One of them was 1 Corinthians 4:5, which says basically that God will make known the secret purposes of people's hearts. And so we talked about this for a while, and then we had the rest of the time to spend some time praying and asking God, what are the secret purposes of my heart? Good and bad, the good motives, the unhealthy motives, but just reveal it because that's what we're living in. I mean, let's live in reality, you know. And that's so ironic for me to say that now when I refuse to face reality.
You weren't facing reality. But
I wasn't. So anyway, we asked this question, and we kind of go quiet for a while, and then after a while we talked. And I was just astounded how God spoke to me right away in this. I think I was astounded because it felt so direct to me what I heard. Mm-hmm. And this is what I heard. I heard this from God. And I wrote this, I'm just reading this from my journal from that time. What I heard from him was, you still are caring too much, Gary. There is a lightness to life that you know not of yet.
This is in your journal.
Yes. And then I heard, Gary, I want to go after that remnant of that sentence that your father gave you when you were younger in high school. And that sentence is, if it's to be, it's up to me. Now, I've known that for a long time, and I've tried to fight that for a long time and not live by it, not let it define me, not let it be my theology.
Right.
But God was saying to me, Gary, this is more in your heart than you realize. There's a remnant of this, and we need to extract that from your heart. God was bringing...
So that's the word. God wants to extract that. What are you picturing when you say that?
Well, yeah, the picture that I had was this, that God was saying, Gary, you're not aware that this is still in your heart. I need to bring us to the surface so you realize how much you're still seeing, living, acting, believing out of that place. And I kind of felt like he was going to start bringing circumstances in that were going to make this rise to the surface, and that was going to trigger me.
Right.
And in fact, to be, again, very candid, I'm honest the whole time, but let me be really candid. I mean, there was a situation that, you know, Sam, I've told you and Jeff about this, but I don't think I've told the other guys. But right away, I mean, God orchestrates something with me. Mm-hmm. And what it was is that on Saturday evening, I think it was, some guys had gone out kayaking, some guys had gone out hiking, some guys took a nap.
Yeah, I remember that clearly.
Yeah, different things. And so, I stayed in the cabin to put together my thoughts for that evening because I thought I just kind of want to figure out what is God up to, and I want to react to that with the session that night. And then I said, listen, I'll put the dinner together. It was pretty much cooked, but I'll heat stuff up and put it together and all this. Well, all the guys came back from the different events, and the guys were having a great time. Some guys out on the deck having a cigar, sipping a beer, laughing. Some guys in the big room around the table eating hors d'oeuvres, talking, laughing. And I am in the kitchen by myself, and I am fuming. I am getting so mad. I'm thinking, really? I'm here all by myself. Nobody's helping me whatsoever, and I am mad. I'm thinking, I am not going into the session this evening, which I am leading well. And, in fact, I got to the point where I didn't want anybody to help me either. I'm that mad. I don't want anybody to help me. And what hit me was, I mean, I ate a little bit, and then I just went upstairs to get away from everybody and try to calm my heart down. And I knew God was saying, see? See, you even operated out of that tonight. So you felt on your own. You felt like if this dinner is going to be, it's up to you. And if that evening is going to happen, it's up to you. And I knew God was putting his finger on that little spot in my heart going, see? See how much you still live and relate and work out of that. So, I mean, he started immediately on me.
I'm just sort of amazed at how God continues to go after this in you and keeps speaking to you about this. What do you think God is after? What is God doing in this? Is he raising this topic so that you have to deal with it, so you can't sort of hide it away anymore?
Well, you know what came out that rather surprised me? And that was, in fact, you and I talked on the phone. I kind of felt like right after the base camp gathering, I was kind of entering a crisis of faith. And what that felt like was, the question I had on my heart was, you know, God, is the only thing you're going to do is you're going to warn me,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to advise me, and you're going to counsel me, but you are not going to help me. And boy, I tell you, I was stuck in that. I was upset. And that was my crisis of faith, of God, really, how involved are you anyway? And it just, it felt like the sentence that I was living which goes so much back to, if it's to be, it's up to me, was this kind of idea that God was saying, look, I'll counsel you and I'll warn you, but you're a man, you're on your own. I'm not going to help you. Grow up and get it done. And part of that, you know, feels right, but it was so wrong. It was so poisonous, you know, to our walk with God and all. So, boy, that was coming up in me emotionally big time. It
so
really wasn't
the way
right
you feel God saying this. It's up to you. You're a big man.
Right. And again, it was that whole thing of, God, you're really not going to help me. It really is up to me. And honestly, where I felt like was, okay, if you're only going to warn me of things, then skip it, okay? Because I have to handle it myself anyway, so why even tell me? And, boy, it was a lot of wrestling and arguing going on. One-sided, my side of arguing.
So, I mean, I'm really curious about this. You're feeling an anger towards God, but it seems to me in some ways there's something healthy about that because you're saying it to God or something. I mean, it's like it's a real relationship. Is that true? I mean, I'm just... It's interesting the way you say this.
Well, yeah, you know what felt, what was good about this was I did feel like God was saying, Gary, the only way we're going to get to this root in your heart is I'm going to aggravate it, right? I'm going to disrupt your heart, your life, your theology, your view, everything, so I can start to dismantle this. And so I knew that the anger I was feeling with God in this was part of this. He was just going in and stirring all this up to say, I got to get this stuff to rise to the surface so I can, you know, I can get it out. And I'll tell you what, I mean, it took me out in many ways. I mean, I didn't want to spend time with God. I thought, what's the use? He's not going to help anyway. I mean, I basically went into the mode of, okay, if this is the way it is, I'm fine with it, and I'm going to operate this way. I'm glad we finally made this clear. You know?
I'm laughing at me as you say this. I'm not laughing at you.
I was going to say, I'm glad you're enjoying my
crisis. It sounds so much better
to
hear it in somebody else's voice, though.
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, yep.
Hey, you know, a couple e-letters ago, you were very lucid on the fact that a person looks at his calling and the possibility of it, and you come right in with, you're not on your own. You know, it's not just you and your calling, it's you and God. And so my question with, if it's to be, it's up to me, is that more directed towards people in your life, or is the mystery, well, what's God's role in what he's called me to do? In other words, it's not just up to you. He's in this with you.
Yeah, you know what? No, it felt more like whatever I want, whatever I want to get done, whatever I feel is important, whatever I have, being my family, whatever, my friendship, it's really up to me to make it happen. And yes, even it's more up to me than anyone else, let alone God, who isn't going to intervene, isn't going to help, isn't going to create, isn't going to do anything miraculous. Yeah, it was kind of all of that, actually, but it just rested on me. It was that thing of, I just have to make this happen. And yet, to be honest, I felt and probably feel more angst with God on this one than with a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, I was seeing these boulders that God warned me about and said, prepare your heart. This is for, you know, I am going to help you over this. I mean, one of the things that this lady said to me when she said this, she said, Gary, I believe there's two things about these really smooth boulders. Is one, you can't climb them because there is no foothold or handhold. And number two is, in your attempts, you will not get hurt. You just won't make it over. In other words, there's no jagged edges that are going to tear you up. And it really did feel true that God was saying, listen, you're going to have some falls, but you're not going to get hurt. There's nothing here to hurt you. But you're going to feel something and try to get over this and not be able to do it. And that's what this felt like.
You know, you honestly spoke to my heart when you honestly admitted that I'm not going to take this to God because I just don't plan on hearing from him on this particular issue. And I think that's pretty widespread amongst us, you know, and worthy of some more conversation, I think, on that, you know. I think that's pretty common.
Are you?
And I'm saying I understand that, too.
Yeah. Well, you know what, and let me jump to something real current, and then we'll go back in the story,
yeah.
And that is, about a week ago, Sam, you sent me an e-book.
Yeah.
You know, you bought me an e-book, and that was this book called A Praying Life, Connecting with God in a Distracting World. And he is nailing me in this book. It is just amazing. I'm only five chapters in. But let me read you something. I wrote this in my journal because, Jeff, it answers this, and it nailed me. God was speaking through this man directly what was going on in my heart. And this is just one quote. He said, if you are not praying, then you are quietly confident that time, money, and talent are all you need in life. Sorry, I'm getting choked up now because it so touches me. And then he says, you'll always be a little too tired, a little too busy. But if, like Jesus, you realize you can't do life on your own, then no matter how busy, no matter how tired you are, you will find time to pray. And that is exactly where I was. And I'm still fighting, right? This, like you said, I'm confident that time, money, and talent will solve everything for me. And I think God is saying, I've got to get you in front of these boulders that you cannot climb over. The time, talent, and money will not solve.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that's why I wasn't praying too, because that's what was going on in my heart.
Yeah.
So are you, I mean, in your heart, are you sensing God can do this? I can't. I mean, is this coupled? Is this sort of hopelessness, helplessness, coupled with some sense that God can, but he's holding back for some reason?
Well, you know what? Back to where I was in the story, which was like October
yeah.
or so. I believe God can, because I believe in his sovereignty. I believe, you know, what a powerful God he is, the creator of all things, and so on. So I do think it got back to that God's just not going to do it. He's just not going to help. And like I said, he'll let you know what's coming, but he's not going to help you on anything. And I think, again, that's why I just found myself going, I'm not praying. that is a waste of time, you know. I don't need to go to somebody and spend time every morning with someone that's going to tell me what I'm doing wrong and how bad it's going to be. And by the way, I'm not going to help you. Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean, Gary. I'm sorry to laugh.
You were just enjoying this a little too much. That's what I think. So let me throw out another thing. So in the midst of this struggle, right,
yeah.
I have a crisis of a particular faith,
yeah.
but not of my faith in general, my relationship with God. So I do happen to go to this place they've opened up in the Springs, similar to the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, just a prayer room where you go in and they play worship music, live music all the time, and you can read and pray and worship whatever you want to do. And there were a number of times I went over there just thinking, all right, God, meet me here then, okay? If we can meet somewhere, how about here? And so one of the things as I was praying, now this is in November,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just trying to pour my heart out, God, saying, God, you have got to come through for this retreat in December. You know, the Noble Heart can't withstand a money loss right now, being the last event with nothing else in front of it. And I see where the finances are going. I said, you got to do something. And I'm pacing back and forth. I can pray better when I move for some reason. And, you know, I did hear God say to me, and so this felt like a glimmer of the intervention of God. And he said to me, and I'm reading out of my journal, he said, as I'm talking about the retreat and numbers of men coming, but I'm also talking about finances, and I know he was after this thing in my heart. I mean, I'm remembering this. And I heard God say, Gary, I can do both. I can use the retreat numbers, and I can use your finances to do something in you and to take care of your retreat and you at the same time. But I can hold back on all of these things to the last second because I got to get to this thing in your heart that you refuse to go to or you at least don't know how to navigate to get to. And then at the last minute, I'm going to bail you out. I'm going to give you that hand up and get you over it. And I'll tell you, I lived off of that for a month and a half. I lived off of that one, half believing it, half not believing it. You know, it's that help me in my faith, you know, give me faith and help me in my lack of faith kind of thing. That's where I was.
Okay.
Okay, so next part of the story.
Believing it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so November. The movie Moneyball comes out, and you know I haven't been in a good place for months. I mean, I can kick into work mode, and I can get it done, and you know that's partly the sit on other conversations.
You can kick into work mode in your sleep, I think.
Well, yeah, because sometimes I do it in my sleep, but part of it is, as I said before, part of my abiding place that's outside of Jesus is work. And so that's where I kind of went, and so I'm kind of in this, I'm showing up for work and I'm doing that kind of thing, but I'm really realizing I am living in some degree, some level of a depression, a discouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said to Lee, I said, listen, let's just get out of the house, let's go watch this movie Moneyball. And as I said when we did this call last week, when Jeff talked about Moneyball, you know, I'm not a baseball person, never watched it, never played it, but I had a sense there was something to this movie, and there was. And God grabbed me in this movie. He kind of took me by surprise, as he will do for all of us, through movies and songs and conversations and pictures. And as I was leaving the theater, and I was moved during the movie for many of the scenes we talked about last week, but as I left the theater, and I said, Lee, I'll go get the car for you because it's a very windy, cold night. That 90 seconds out to the car, you know, God says to me, and I'm not praying. I don't pray much. I wasn't praying, but as I was walking, I heard God say, so, Gary, you've given up, haven't you? And immediately he spoke to what was in my heart. So I couldn't deny it. I just had to deal with it because he just nailed it. And I just said, I have. I've given up on it. I can't make it happen. I'm done with it. I can ride it to the ground, I guess, but I'm done. And then he said to me, and this is, again, all 90 seconds, and he said, Gary, do you realize that people believe in what you're doing more than you do, and people believe in you more than you believe in you, that they see something that you refuse to see? And he just nailed me, and I knew it was true. And I was living in a different place. I was living in this, if it's to be, it's up to me, and I'm not getting it done. You know, and I'm just damn disappointed in myself. And so Lee gets in the car, and I get it back together, you know, because I did not want to talk about this. And we get home, and I start to journal. And I'm trying to do it where Lee can't see what I'm doing. So I'm kind of drooling on my iPads, thinking maybe she's thinking I'm checking the weather or I'm checking something. And, of course, she asked me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just writing a few thoughts down. And what thoughts? You know, just a few thoughts. Well, like a few what thoughts?
Jeez.
And then, you know, finally she probed in, and I had to say, look, this movie moved me, and I don't think I can talk about it yet, and it's too personal. It's too unclear at this point. But once again, God came back and said, Gary, I'm trying to get to your heart. You know, you're not looking at these things. And so that was a turning point for me, to be able to say to God and to my own heart, okay, look, I'll die over this thing. I'll go down with this thing. If I got to go down over something, I want it to be this. I believe in this much. And I felt like God said, don't you forget this then. It's not over, so you're going to have to remember this.
You know, as you're speaking, obviously you're still moved by this. And, you know, this happened, I don't know, you said late November, so 3 months ago. And yet it still seems very fresh to you.
Yeah.
Is this, I don't know, are you still touched by God in this thing? What's going on that 3 months later you're tearing up in this?
Oh, I'm kind of surprised that I'm crying over this tonight. And I know these things. I've even looked at my journal again before this call, and it still feels, very raw, very, I'm just in the middle of this. That's what I'm saying before, right? If it's disrupt, dismantle, rebuild, and release, I'm somewhere right in the middle of this stuff. And I'd like to pretend I'm not, but I know I'm still in the middle. I know there are more boulders in the field.
But you also know, I mean, that you're willing to die for it. I mean, it sounds like you turned a corner at a certain point inside, in some way. This is worth dying for.
Yes. Now, I'm, you know, I still feel fear in my heart because, like I said, I get over one boulder. Like I felt like I did at the end of December. I got an arm up over one boulder and came down only to turn around and see another huge one in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it still feels scary. I'm still living with this. God, you have to get into this thing. You have to get in the ring with me. But let me go back and just hit one more thing as we transition, as you keep asking.
Well, I want to ask you a question before you do that. Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
As you feel like you're, I mean, this is worth dying for. This is worth fighting for in your heart. How much do you think God thinks it's worth fighting for? Really, I mean, not hypothetically, but how much do you sense in your heart that God says this message, what you've got brought, is worth fighting for His sake? Does He want to fight for it? Or is it just you fighting for it?
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm going to answer it this way, Sam. I believe, and God keeps going digging deep into my heart to say, but this is what you really believe. But I really do believe I believe.
You hope that, you believe.
That God, yeah. that what I am doing with my life is what God wants me to do. That He believes in this. That this is important.
Yeah.
This is important to Him. It's important to me. It's important for other people. I really do believe in that. I don't doubt that, even though God came back and say, see how much, you know, you don't believe in yourself as much as others do, and you don't believe in this as much as others do. So actually, as you say that now, and I repeat that back, I'm thinking, gosh, I guess I don't believe it as much, because that's what took me to tears, even repeating it.
Uh-huh.
what is at the surface of my heart more, that I'm more aware of, is I think God believes in it deeply, but I'm not so sure he's going to help me with it.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like he's saying, hey, I need you to do this, okay? And good luck with it. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of evaluate on this later. But you know what? Now that you've asked this question, I go back and remember that thing he said to me coming back from that movie. I would think if that was God, and I believe it was, that God was saying, see, you really don't believe I believe in this, God speaking. You don't believe in as much as you think you do. So
that's sort of what I wonder. I mean, I think every guy on the chat line says, God believes in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some ways, I think the message you have is reflecting a part of God's heart. I mean, it's your glory is a reflection of his glory. Like Paul was compelled to preach. It was a reflection of God's bringing his gospel, I think. God is compelled to bring this to the world. Anyway.
Hey, guys, I just want to bring a note of clarity in as we're saying, I believe in this thing. I believe in this thing, or you know, what is it? And I think this is some of the most clear thinking, Gary, that you've had in the way you answered the question about from Moneyball. What is it that you see? And what is it that you would like to bring change to? And you said, I am unsettled by the diminishment, dismissal, and sidelining of individuals who carry the image and glory of God, be it through the relentless assault of the world and Satan, or the abuse and abandonment of people. I am disturbed by a quick fix teaching and counsel about calling that ultimately disheartens people, distancing them from God. I absolutely love it when I see a glimmer of vein of gold that runs through a person's life, but more importantly, when they recognize and own the glory of their life. And I think that's the hill worth dying on. And, you know, if there's any wondering if God is in this, I've never seen his heart more clearly revealed than in that particular statement. This is what I love about what we're doing. It's not so much building an organization. It's finding that vein of gold in people's lives and what a sacrifice that is, because it's one man at a time. It just looks so different, you know. So keeping afloat, especially in this economy, has its trials and tribulations. But what we're doing is just incredible. And I have to agree with God when he said, I think more people believe in what you're doing more than you do.
And the thing that I like about all this, Gary, is I like the way God is going after your heart in this thing. I mean, you're describing this, and you believe it, and you don't believe it. And God is going after to change something in you. And I know that it's hard, and I laugh too much, but I think it's really beautiful in some ways what God is going after you in, something so much deeper and richer.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Thank you. Thank you, you guys. And I think partly what was so true of me then and is still true of me somewhat is, and I think God just arranged this. He just engineered this. I had such an exhausted heart because I was carrying everything myself. I mean, it's just like Richard asked me, McAllister, he said, Gary, do you still feel like you're in the kitchen again, all alone? That's a great question. And I don't feel like that anymore. And
yeah.
I think God allowed me to get to carry so much alone. He allowed me to just do it the way I wanted to do it, the way I believed I was to do it, that I was so exhausted that I think I had given up because I couldn't carry anymore. And if I can't carry anymore, this is going down because I'm the only one doing this. You know, deep in my heart, I think I was living with that. And the one thing I wanted to throw out that I had read around this time as well, which was so powerful for me, so needed, and it was this quote from Dallas Willard's book, Divine Guidance. Because again, I'm looking at what's not happening, and we all do this, you know.
Right.
This isn't happening. I don't have this. This door didn't open, and so on. And I'm just thinking, God, really? you know, if this is the way it's going to be, if you're defining our relationship this way, then at least I get it now. And two things hit me. One, this Dallas Willard quote that I had gone back and I'd highlighted and I read. He said, to accept whatever comes is not guidance. Merely that something happens does not indicate that God, that this is God's will. He said, with respect to many events in our future, God's will is that we should determine that what will happen. Now, let me just stop there for a second, because, you see, I was kind of looking at what was happening and said, well, it's God's will. Obviously, he doesn't care. I don't have the strength to carry this anymore. And so I was just kind of going, well, God's will is this going down. And when I read this later, I thought, oh, see, God's saying, I didn't will that. First of all, do you know what you're up against? Secondly, do you know what I'm going after in your heart? Anyway, the very last sentence in this quote, he says, what the child does when not told what to do is the final indicator of what and who that child is. And I want to read that again, because, see, he was going after who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, he says, what the child does when not told what to do is the final indicator of what and who that child is. And I really felt like God was just saying, Gary, there are certain things I'm not going to tell you yet, because I just need you to face the boulder. And I'm trying to get to who you are and what's in your heart, and then show you what's really true of you and bring you to that place. But again, I was kind of seeing, reading God's will as how things were in the moment. And the guy was saying to Dallas Willard, hey, just because it is this way doesn't mean it's my will. And it was just, I needed to hear that. That was a turning point for me.
So I'm just, you know, if you had to have a picture of God as your father in this moment, what is God, and you're a kid, you know, what is the picture of God doing? Is he spanking you for not doing what he's asking you to do? And what is your image right now of how your dad would have treated you in this, or what God is treating you in this? You know, to use the kid metaphor.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the problem. That's a great question, Sam, because what I feel like is a grown-up with God and not a kid with God.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's hitting me as I'm reading this book that you sent, A Praying Life, is, you know, he says the basis for prayer is helplessness. And what I think I'm realizing, that this uneasiness I feel when I go to pray every morning. Now, I'm not saying I pray every morning, but every time I do go to pray to have this time, I get very uneasy. And I've been asking God, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why, when it's prayer time, I want to get to my computer, I want to go make another cup of coffee,
uh-huh.
I want to do something else. Now, I know there's warfare in that, and I know there's different things going on, but there's been this unusual uneasiness in me. And what I think I've realized as I was praying, as I was reading some of this book, and then I'd stop and pray about it for a while, was I think what I have been up against that's making me so uneasy is I am very uneasy about being helpless. I really don't like it.
Yeah.
I like to know what to do. I like to have a good assessment of things. I like to be equipped. Now, I think this is probably true of most people. I'm not trying to make myself sound unique in this, but I'm telling you what I'm up against. And so I think, one, I don't feel like I need to pray because, hey, time, money, and talent will solve it. And then when I realize those things won't solve it, I'm so uncomfortable that I don't want to face that by praying. And so it's really good. I feel like God is putting more and more light on, Gary, I told you I got to go back to these things, and I need to get these things to come up to the surface in your heart so we can skim off the dross, those things, and get to it. And that's been a huge thing, I mean, within the last week for me.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I hate that feeling of helplessness. I almost don't want to go. It doesn't seem like, I'd rather go to God in strength than in helplessness, as if there's shame there, or I've done something wrong, or I'm a little boy again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, I know that feeling.
Well, Jeff, you're a better man than me. I don't think I go to God when I'm in strength. But anyway.
Well, and you know what? That's really fascinating, Jeff, because as you're saying that, I'm hearing you, I realize that this is going to sound really weird to say, but I relate more to Jesus as my brother and as my kind of commander-in-chief than I do to the Father, to God the Father, because I don't want to be a child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't, until you said that, I thought, oh, there's something right there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's kind of up to current time, and I see we've used up our current time, so I'll leave it at the last question you may want to ask, or...
Here's the question I have to ask. Going along the line of God, your father, and you as a kid, which isn't the way you want to picture it, given what you're thinking right now, what do you think is the image God would want you to have? What's the picture of a father with their child in this moment and what you're doing right now?
Yeah, you know, here's how I picture it, and I actually talk about this during the retreat when we talk about mystery.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm doing mystery, and it's not Jeff or you, Sam, and it's this idea that, you know, mystery is the invitation of God to be intimate with him. It's where he says, look, I'm going to give you just enough so that you can move, but not enough so that you have to come back to me quickly, where God invites us to sit on his lap and he puts his arm around our shoulder and he whispers into our ear. And that's the picture I see of God, and that's why usually when I'm sharing that, it brings me to tears, you know.
Right.
Because I do believe that of God. I think that hesitancy is on my side of not wanting to feel like a child, not wanting to feel like someone who doesn't know, can't handle it, isn't kind of the player in the game at the time, you know. I know it's issues in my heart. I know that. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers that question.
No, I think that's helpful. You know, as I was thinking about how I would answer that for you, which is not what I was asking you, I sort of felt almost like God as a father teaching his kid how to ride a bike. And I'm thinking of the way my dad taught me to ride a bike. And, you know, there was a moment in time where, you know, he keeps pushing me and I'd fall. He pushes me a little bit and fall. You know how you teach a kid. You're sort of running along with it, then you let go. And I felt like, I remember one time where I had ridden for, you know, I don't know, 20 yards. It felt like a mile, but 20 yards, and then I fell. And I really had it. And I remember my dad, but I fell, I scraped my knee. I remember my dad saying, you know, Sam, you can do this. I want to get you back up on the bike one more time because you now can do it. You now can do it. And, you know, there's no correction. There's no condemnation. There's just, I know that you can do this. And I feel like God saying to you, you know, I've been dealing with this issue. If it's to be, it's up to me for a long time. But, you know, you really can do it. You're there. We're just going to get you on the bike one more time, and I think you can do it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. That's good. That's good. I do feel like I am growing. I'm maturing. I do feel like things that God has brought to the surface as he said he was going to do, I think things are legitimately changing. They don't feel completely different now, but it feels like it's less of. Honestly, in the last couple of weeks, I feel like, gosh, I do feel like I'm becoming a different man, little by little, and that's encouraging. Even though I still feel like God is saying, you know, I'll let you know when you're getting out of the boulder field, but it's not yet. So,
yeah.
But at least now I feel like he's in the boulder field with me, and he really is up on top of that boulder waiting for me to reach my hand up, and he's ready to reach his hand down and grab me and pull me over.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, versus sitting there kicking and swearing at the rock. So, yeah.
Which always does a lot of good.
Oh, it does a lot of good.
Yeah.
I have bruised feet. I can't get over it. I go hoarse after a while. Yeah.
Hey, Gary, haven't heard this. You know what's interesting is how God has fathered you through this. And the fact that somehow this prophetic word was downloaded on your iPod and you're on shuffle and she comes in when she comes in, you know, almost sort of like recalculating, you know, I'm gonna get to you with this. It's just, you know, if you're not going to listen now, you're going to listen at some time, you know. And then how he spoke to you after Moneyball. And it was the same word. And the thing that he has your attention on, of course, obviously, is the noble heart. You know, and one of the things that almost like you have to be careful about is that you are very talented. You're a hard worker. You're a great writer and an even better speaker, probably. And, you know, and right now it just seems like there's this invitation. You know, I love the idea that Sam sent you this book, you know, and there's this invitation to go to him, to spend some more time with him and in prayer. And that seems to be more the direction, almost as if the noble heart is Leah and time with God is Rachel. You know, it's and of course, you know, I understand what you were saying about Jesus, you know, almost you can relate to him more, you know, than the Father. But it bears repeating, you know, Jesus said, hey, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And I think maybe some of that invitation is that this Father isn't like your Father. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to feel like the schoolboy. You're not going to be dismissed because you don't get it. You know, those sorts of things. And that, you know, this is part of the journey of walking into that. And so this idea of spending time with God in prayer seems to be the coordinate that I'm picking up on. And I'm so thankful that Sam did that, bought that for you. And just for right now, I would say that would be a highlight coordinate for me.
You know, Jeff, that's so good because as you're speaking and I'm listening to you and I'm listening to God, I just felt like what came to me was, Gary, you didn't so much like being a child son to your father, and you definitely didn't enjoy being an adult son to your father. You know, there just wasn't a great relationship. And so what I usually felt around my dad as an adult was I wasn't doing enough. You know, it was a mistake to go on staff with Camps Crusade for Christ, and when am I going to get a real job? And so yeah. I think that really does, as you're saying that plays into my uneasiness of coming as a child to the Father. I'd rather come as an adult, you know, to the Father, or an adult to the Commander-in-Chief, you know what I mean? So this is good. This has been very revealing for me.
You know, there's that one verse that we're so fearful of, and, you know, it's where Jesus said, you know, many will come to me in that day and say, you know, have we not done miracles in your name? And I'll say to you, I never knew you, depart from me. And what's so amazing is what's so positive about that statement is that it's all about relationship to him. I never knew you. So knowing you is everything, you know, and in his mind. And so, you know, the fact that some of the things that are keeping you maybe from prayer are some of those buried things with you and your father. I mean, that don't we take that junk and project that onto our heavenly Father? And so you know, the issue is definitely the noble heart, and it's around this thing. And yet at the same time, it's just weeding out all those lies, you know, that, you know, we sort of bring into this relationship with God, you know. And so that is definitely a deepening, you know, going on right now from what I can see.
Mm-hmm. And, well, everybody, this has been a really great evening. This mm-hmm. has just been a terrific evening of a chance. You know, I think one of the things that I've really liked about this, Gary, and it's for us to hear you discuss what's going on in your life in the middle of what's going on in your life. You know, so I think so often we hear everybody reflect back on it at the end of their life, but I think you're talking about right in the middle of a turning point in your journey, of a realignment, and I think it's been really good for all of us. I appreciate your your candor and your honesty in all of this. I really do. It's been
refreshing
and rich.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it is so, I mean, when I say this, I'm not saying this to be encouraging or to promote Basecamp and you guys, but it is so good to be with you guys in Basecamp. What we have here in Basecamp is just gold. It just is. The relationships, distant and close, you know, online, in person, we come and get things we need and we go back out. This is invaluable to me. And yeah, God put this on my heart for us, but he did it very much for me. And so I don't know that I could have done this or gone through this, still be in it, if it weren't for you guys and going through it the way I am. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
All right, everybody. Thank you for doing this. And we will be back on soon. We'll let you know the next campfire conversations that are coming up. But thank you, everyone. Jeff and Sam, thank you. You did a great job. You were pretty gentle with me, but you had great questions. Thank you.
Okay.
You bet.
Thanks.
Love
a lot,
you, Gary.
Thanks so much, man.
Okay.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Bye.